This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Joe Biden pardoned his son. We'll talk about that. We have a new FBI director, I hope. We have a couple FBI guys here to address that. All that, tariffs, and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, so late last night, the news you are well aware of by now, late last night, Joe Biden, kind of odd to do it on a Sunday, decided to go out and pardon his son. Now, let's get past all the things you already know, the things you've already heard all day long. Yes, I am aware. He said repeatedly that he wasn't going to. He always out there saying things like this.
As we sit here in Normandy, your son Hunter is on trial, and I know that you cannot speak about an ongoing federal prosecution. But let me ask you, will you accept the jury's outcome, their verdict, no matter what it is?
Yes.
And have you ruled out a pardon for your son?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I could sit here and play you the things you've seen all day long, the montages of Joe saying I won't and the media saying he won't. Let's get past all that. You already know all that. Joe Biden lied and said he wasn't going to pardon his son. I'm going to tell you why this pardon is a good thing in a few minutes. Just hang with me. But first of all, let's cover this. Joe Biden is a liar and has always been a liar. And as I used to say repeatedly back when he was still pretending to be the president of the United States of America, Joe Biden is, as amazing as this is, the biggest liar in the history of the United States presidency. No other president, Republican or Democrat, has come close. And I say this as someone who knows all politicians lie, all presidents lie. They all do. They will shade the truth and manipulate this. Joe Biden, for his entire career, has not shaded the truth. He's one of these sociopaths. You've probably known one or two in your life. A complete sociopath. I used to work with a guy who lied all the time, and they used to say about him that he would rather climb up the tree to tell a lie than stand on the ground and tell the truth. That's Joe Biden. He didn't shade the truth. He has repeatedly told these gigantic, easily verifiable lies, and he does so with a straight face. There's video going back decades of Joe Biden saying, I was the top of my law school. And then, of course, that's easy to verify. Everyone can just look at the papers. You weren't even close to the top of the law school. He said he taught the Second Amendment in college as a professor. He never taught a single class as a professor. He said he had a football scholarship. He said Bo Biden has died in every war from World War II to Korea to the war in Iraq. Joe Biden tells gigantic, verifiable lies because Joe Biden is a sociopath, a criminal, and a scumbag, and has done so many times throughout history that if Joe Biden told me water was wet, I would just naturally assume it became dry. Joe Biden is a liar. So, like you, I never believed this anyway. So let's get past all that. Let's first of all address why this is, in a way, a good thing. You see, on a little level, which we'll get to, it's a father pardoning his son. We'll talk about why in a moment. But on a macro level, this is obviously bad for the country. It is. The country as a whole, if you zoom out 30,000 foot view and you look, it's terrible. It's terrible for the country. America, Americans, Republican and Democrat, and everybody in the middle woke up today and saw the news that they didn't see it last night, and virtually every single one of them, unless you're a paid Democrat, and I realize there are many of those in the media and otherwise, but unless you're a paid communist hack, everybody looked at this news and thought, well, that's completely corrupt. Wait, that's wrong? Hold on, he gave him a blanket pardon for the span of like 11 years? That's awful. Even Democrats like Michael Bennett. Michael Bennett's a Democrat senator came out and said, this looks bad. Okay, so everyone woke up, everybody, normies, Democrats, Republicans woke up today and thought, that looks bad. It's kind of icky. So why would this in any way be a good thing? Well, remember, legitimacy, the faith you give, the faith the citizen gives to corrupt evil institutions, That is the power. That is the juice those institutions use to hurt you. You see, if you have faith in the FBI, if you're still one of these losers out there, the great men and women at the FBI, you're actually committing an act of evil because you're legitimizing evil and you're enabling evil. So it's really important that you don't give them legitimacy. It's more important that people wake up and realize the FBI is evil. We'll get to the Cash Patel talk in a little bit. So back to Joe Biden. The Democrat Party is evil. They're run by corrupt, evil communists now. And while that may have been very obvious to you, because you watch this show on a regular basis, I'm sure you read things, watch things, listen to things, for many, many, many normal Americans, they haven't completely gotten to that realization yet. And while I don't celebrate that the Democrat Party is now completely evil, it is a good thing if the American people wake up today and realize that. It robs these evil people, this evil regime, of legitimacy. So now, the next time they get up behind the podium and tell a lie, which they will do, they lie as easy as they breathe, the lie simply won't have enough legs because they've lost more and more legitimacy. In a way, a weird, twisted way, I'm almost kind of happy that Joe Biden pardoned Hunter. I'm not surprised by it in the least. Told you this was coming. Everyone knew this was coming. Not surprised by it in the least. And now the American people are waking up to the fact that these people are evil. They lie about everything. And laws never apply to them. They don't think they should apply to them. Now, back to the laws. Why did Joe Biden do this? Why did Joe Biden pardon his son? Well, remember that old video? Joe Biden, we've played it for you a bunch on this show, but Joe Biden, it's almost bizarre. Really, these politicians try to keep their corruption hidden, but Joe Biden, on camera, in a room full of people, stood up and bragged about having a prosecutor fired?
I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to press conference. Said, "Nah," I said, "I'm not going to. We're not going to give you the $1 billion." They said, "You have no authority. You're not the president." The president said, "I said, call him." I said, "I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion." I said, "You're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here." And I think it was what, 6 hours. I looked. I said, "I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money." Well, son of a bitch, got fired.
You see, this pardon is a blanket pardon and a backdated pardon. Why did Joe Biden want that prosecutor fired so badly? Because that prosecutor was investigating a company. Maybe you've heard of it. It's called Burisma. Burisma, that's the company, the Ukrainian company, that hired Hunter Biden to sit on its board. $80,000+ a month. Why would a foreign energy company hire Hunter Biden to sit on its board when Hunter Biden himself has no energy experience whatsoever to speak of? Well, everyone knows. We don't have to sugarcoat it. They hired him because Joe Biden was delivering something to these people. You don't just pay $83,000 a month to Hunter Biden so he can snort lines of coke off your secretary. You hire Hunter Biden so you'll have access to then-Vice President Joe Biden. You see, Joe Biden is a criminal. He comes from an entire criminal family. The reason you backdate this pardon and deliver such a blanket pardon is not because you're a loving father to your dirtball crackhead son. You give this pardon out because your son knows where all the bodies are buried. And a dirtball like Hunter Biden is not going to go away to federal prison for 10, 15 years without speaking up. You hand your son a pardon, not because he's your boy, but because he's your criminal accomplice, you see. And this comes back to what I was talking about earlier. In a weird, twisted way, I'm glad he did it. Because these people are evil, they're liars, they're criminals, they're corrupt. And you already knew that. You knew that yesterday, right? You knew that yesterday morning before the Hunter Biden pardon came down. You already knew that. But we're not worried about you. We're worried about your normie neighbor who still says things like, the great men and women at the FBI. Your normie neighbor needs to wake up and realize the United States government is an evil, criminal, corrupt organization. And when we wake up and find out Joe Biden backdated an 11-year pardon for his scumbag son, it helps your normie neighbor realize that fact. And in a weird way, that helps us, and it's a good thing. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have so much to get to tonight. Cash Patel stuff, tariff talk. Before we get to any of that, let's get to your sleep. So I know you're well aware that it's officially Christmas season, and you walk in any one of these coffee shops and it's Christmas theme this and Christmas flavor that. Well, maybe you're thinking, I wish Beam had something like that because I love my Dream Powder, but I want delicious Christmas flavors. Well, Beam delivered that. You see, it's a cup of hot chocolate. I normally have the cinnamon chocolate. But now, they have amazing flavors like brownie batter, white chocolate peppermint, all natural. It's a cup of hot chocolate, and it'll put you to sleep. And when you wake up in the morning, you feel great. Does that sound good to you? Go to shopbeam.com/JesseKelly and sleep like a baby. We'll be back.
I'm extremely proud of my son, Hunter. He has overcome an addiction. He's one of the brightest, most decent men I know. And I am satisfied that I'm not going to do anything. I said I'd abide by the jury decision. And I will do that, and I will not pardon him.
Sometimes, since he always hides on the beach now, sometimes I forget that the president is not even a functional adult. Then we play these little videos. Anyway, pardoned him. Surprise, surprise. But a lot of people don't realize this wasn't the first kind of blanket get-out-of-jail-free card Hunter almost got in recent memory. Joining me now, talk about that and some other things, Mae Mailman, director of the wonderful Independent Women's Law Center. Hey, Mae! People forget about what Mr. David Weiss, whatever his dumb name is, and the thing he tried to pull when he was supposed to be prosecuting Hunter.
You're absolutely right. So this is take two. Take one was there was supposed to be a plea deal where Hunter Biden said, I plead guilty to nothing, essentially. Like, I apologize for nothing. And in exchange for that, he was going to get immunity, a deal with the government. So basically doing it through contract, where here this is through executive fiat. Now, if you remember the last time, a judge had some questions. Wait, so is this plea deal covering just the related crimes that are being investigated, or is this everything? And the DOJ kind of said, oh, we can't say out loud it's everything. So they said it was just these crimes. And Hunter Biden said, no, that's not what you agreed to earlier. So the deal fell through before. And I used to think that Hunter was stupid. He should have just taken the limited deal before. But now he's out of jail anyway. It doesn't matter.
You are educated. I am stupid. So I need you to lay something out for me because I really get confused when it comes to this legal stuff. It's this blanket pardon. Everyone's talking about it today. Covers pretty much 11 years. I think it's 10, but if you look at the dates, it's 11 years. It's a backdated pardon. So what does that mean? As in, if we find out that Hunter Biden murdered the babysitter back in 2018, is he covered there? Is this like a just blanket get out of jail free card? Are there a specific list of crimes? How does this work?
It's a blanket pardon, so it would cover everything, but it doesn't cover. So, but a couple of things. So one, it doesn't cover state crimes. So the federal government is not in charge of state governments. And then two, it doesn't cover new crimes arising out of things that might have been pardoned. So let's just say he did murder somebody and then he gets questioned about it and he lies on the stand or, you know, something like that. Like, you can still be held accountable for perjury. So, like, Hunter Biden is going to live a long life after this. I don't know whether he's going to be able to stay out of trouble. So it really does, it ends on the date that it ends. But yeah, this is ridiculously sweeping.
Okay, how ridiculous is it, May? Have we seen things like this before? I personally can't remember having seen anything like this before, but is this something that's been done?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there is some sort of constitutional pardon expert who could tell you, maybe for pardons for people who are already dead, just clearing their name, something like that. These are sort of symbolic. I would imagine that there are full and unconditional pardons. But for somebody who has lived a life of crime, who has cheated the American taxpayer out of their money, who has been involved in bribery schemes with the federal government, for people who are unregistered foreign agents like Hunter Biden is, you know, appears to be, no, like this is one of one for that.
Okay, May, let's shift gears here because there are other things going on besides the president and his dirtball son. Let's talk about the culture war stuff because you have been all over this stuff, specifically dudes pretending to be chicks and beating up women in sports. Where are we in all this?
Well, I mean, the men are still beating up women in sports, although sometimes the women win. So if you are following the San Jose State University women's volleyball team, Boise State didn't even participate in the championship because they didn't want to risk, well, A, they wanted to save women's sports, and B, they didn't want their women to have to get a ball smash in their face and that they get paralyzed for life like Peyton McNabb. And so, yes, the NCAA, the Biden administration, federal regulations are still putting men in women's sports. But luckily, there was an election and there's going to be a new sheriff in charge. So there, I think you're going to very immediately see changes in the federal government. The question then is whether some of these private entities like the Soccer Federation, these the sport bodies governing the Olympics, governing volleyball, these types of things, whether they're going to act too.
May, Donald Trump's about to be president of the United States here in, I don't know, like a month and a half, month and 20 days, give or take. What impact can he have on all this stuff, all the Title IX stuff? What power does the president have to affect change in this area? Because it is really gross. That story about Peyton is just unbelievably awful. I can't believe we allow that stuff in this country. But what power does Trump have, and what power do you think he will use to get this stuff switched around?
Yeah, so I think on day one, you have the Department of Education, which, yes, does need to be eliminated, but it's not going to happen on day one. So what are they going to do on day one? They are going to save women's sports and save women's spaces. The Office of Civil Rights there launches investigations, and they see whether universities are discriminating on the basis of race or discriminating on the basis of sex. And if universities, if colleges, if daycares are not providing safe spaces for women, then they should be investigated and they should have their federal funding pulled. So I think the Department of Education can immediately launch an investigation. I'm going to say San Jose State, number one. Western Carolina University should be number two. That's where Peyton McNabb currently goes, and she does not have access to a woman's bathroom there. They won't give her. They say men can go into the women's bathrooms. All right. And then you've got to do the harder work of rewriting the regulations. So I know that the public is smart and they think that, oh, if we voted for Trump, that means that the regulation can change now. Unfortunately, the way that the government works is that a bunch of lawyers have to come together and they have to give all of these reasons for taking down the Biden rule. Then they have to put a new regulation up. It has to have a comment period. They have to receive hundreds of thousands of comments. They have to sift through those. They have to do a new. So anyway, eventually, I think then you're going to see a new Title IX rule, but that unfortunately can't be a day one action.
Great. That's the last thing we need is a bunch of you lawyers coming together. May, thank you so much for what you do, though. Appreciate it. All right. Cash Patel. We got what we wanted. We hope. Cash Patel is being put up as the next FBI director. Who is he? Do you know him? We have a couple former FBI agents, heroes of mine, to be frank, and I don't say that about many people who gave up their careers at the FBI because of how evil it's become. Let's talk to them about Cash. Do they love him? Do they hate him? Before we get to them, let's talk about Pure Talk. You see, it is the Christmas season, isn't it? And we're all looking around at, what do I buy? I don't know, what do I buy? Well, everyone wants a new phone all the time. Unless you just got a new phone, you want a new phone. Your phone's slowing down. The battery's getting crappy. You're getting frustrated with this. Oh, wait, I need yet another update that'll ruin my phone. Just get a hold of PureTalk. Not only would you switch your cell phone service to PureTalk, do you save a fortune. You don't need Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile. PureTalk's in the same network, but PureTalk has all the new phones and stuff like that. If you want to keep your phone, you can, but you want a new iPhone, they have it. You want a new Android, they have it. And you pay less. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. Go patronize a company that shares your values, and they have all the new phones. Congrats, just did your Christmas shopping for you. Let's talk to the FBI agents. Former, next. Cash Patel. Obviously, I know who Cash Patel is. You watch this show on any kind of a regular basis, you're probably somebody who knows Cash Patel is. But let's assume maybe you don't. Came out over the weekend. Trump says, hey, Cash Patel is going to be my guy to lead the FBI. I didn't mean for that to rhyme, but I'm glad it did. So here's a little snippet of who Cash Patel is.
The FBI's footprint has gotten so freaking big. And the biggest problem the FBI has had has come out of its intel shops. I'd break that component out of it. I'd shut down the FBI Hoover building on day one and reopening the next day as a museum of the deep state. And I'd take the 7,000 employees that work in that building and send them across America to chase down criminals. Go be cops. You're cops.
That sounds wonderful to me. What does Steve and Garrett think about that? Joining me now, two FBI whistleblowers. And as I said, I don't have many people I look up to, but I so respect people who gave it all up to expose the Cheka. Steve Friend, Garrett O'Boyle, join me. What do they think? That's a little bit more important than what I think about it. Okay, Garrett, let's begin with you. Cash Patel, you like it? You hate it? What is it?
I love it, Jesse. And thanks for having me back on. I appreciate it. 2 years ago, when people first started hearing about Steve Friend and Garrett O'Boyle, I wouldn't have guessed that it would have gotten to this point where Cash Patel, barring getting confirmed, will be the next FBI director. You couldn't make this stuff up in a fiction book. And if you put it in a fiction book, nobody would read it because it would be so unbelievable. But from my perspective, being now, let's see, into my 27th month of an indefinite suspension for making protected disclosures to Congress, I couldn't be happier about this selection.
Well, that says a lot to me. Steve, what say you?
I'm in whole agreement with Garrett on this one. Look, Cash Patel reached out independently to him and I through his charitable foundation when we were in our most dire situations, very much like you did for me, Jesse. That to me shows the measure of a man. He did not ask for any accolades or any recognition. So just the character quality that exudes, that fidelity, bravery, and integrity, the actual unofficial motto of the FBI. And then beyond that, he's uber qualified and competent. He has a background as not just a JSOC prosecutor and working on the House Select Committee and Intelligence, but he was actually a public defender as well, both at the local and the federal level. He brings that sort of experience, looking at both sides of it, the respect for the process, the respect for civil liberties, and he's just also represents a turning of the generation as well. Cash is a pretty young guy. I believe that he's going to be the best option if we're going to have any sorts of renovation of the FBI. And I'm still firmly in the camp that dissolution and shattering it to 1,000 pieces is ultimately what it would come down to. But if we have one chance, one silver lining here, I think Cash Patel is a man to get it done.
That's music to my ears. Garrett, let me ask you about what Steve just said. I'm obviously of the belief that you cannot reform it, you can't save it. Once an institution, especially a government one, gets this bad, it has to go away. But you know, you've been inside the building. I've never been inside the building. I'm sure I probably will be next time a Democrat gets elected. But what say you? Can it be reformed? Can it be saved? Can someone like Cash go in there and turn it into what it's supposed to be, what you two signed up to do in there?
You know, Jesse, I've long believed that it couldn't be reformed, that it needed to be shattered and scattered into 1,000 pieces. And like that clip you played from Cash, turned the Hoover building into a museum of the deep state. Now, if there is any hope for it, it's going to take strong leadership from the top down. And there certainly are people in the FBI in those positions as we speak that want nothing to do with Kash Patel, and they want the FBI to be the modern day American Stasi. Hopefully Kash can turn it around, and hopefully there are enough people in the institution left who want to do the right thing. I struggle with that too, because you know, look at Steve and I and a couple others who have come forward, and now suddenly we are hearing murmurings from inside the FBI that so many people are happy about this selection as we are. But where were they the last few years? If everybody who leaned into their cowardice for all these years, if they all would have stood up and said, hey, this agency is broken, it needs to be fixed, it would have already been fixed. So I have my reservations, and I know some of these deep state apparatchiks are going to try to thwart a directorship by Kash Patel, and many are already hard at work to do that. But at the same time, I've been already contacted by a number of my former colleagues who are excited about this selection. And so maybe, just maybe, there's a little bit of hope for the FBI, but I'm not holding my breath quite yet.
Yeah, I'm not either. Hope is not a plan, as they say. And speaking of those deep state types, I hope nobody watching thinks they all have a D before their title, because there are plenty of R types there, like one Mike Rounds. Let's talk about the possibility of Patel getting confirmed, because I can't help but think about this South Dakota Senator Mike Rounds saying things like this.
Chris Wray, who the president nominated the first time around, and I think the president picked a very good man to be the director of the FBI when he did that in his first term. When we meet with him behind closed doors, I've had no objections to the way that he's handled himself. And so I don't have any complaints about the way that he's done his job right now.
Steve, I hear things like that and it disheartens me, brother, because I say to myself, these people are never going to allow any reformers through. It doesn't matter. Pick a name. Call it Cash for now. They're not going to be able to get through. What say you?
Well, obviously, Mike Rounds approves of Christopher Wray's FBI as it went after Catholics who went to the Latin Mass, or moms who went to a school board meeting to express displeasure with critical race theory being taught to their children, or Christopher Wray's FBI, which reassigned me from investigating child pornography and told me that it was not a priority going forward and that I really needed to focus on the elderly women that were there on January 6th, or imprisoned concentration camp survivors who were praying outside of an abortion clinic. But, you know, he's got really nice hair and he comes off really well. So we approve that. Mike Rounds from the blood red state of South Dakota. Just yet another one of the low T GOP examples, exhibit A right there, of why we have a primary process that needs to get these guys out of office, because they just do not accept what time it is.
A primary process we have to start using a lot better than we currently do. Garrett, speaking of whistleblowers, it wasn't just people within the FBI who were going after guys like you and Steve. Democrat members of Congress made it their mission to come after you, didn't they?
They sure did, Jesse. And as the story of the suspendables continues to unfold, we learn a little bit. It seems every couple months we get a little bit more information. And yes, they continue to come after me and others. And maybe not that many people will remember, but shortly after Steve and I testified in May of 2023, some Democrats, Jerry Nadler and Stacey Plaskett, they referred me to the DOJ for criminal charges regarding perjury and obstruction. And, you know, fast forward to now, we're continuing to learn a little bit more information about that and how the FBI had a case open and they were subpoenaing X for information related to my ex account, as well as Kyle Serafin's ex account. And they even subpoenaed my wife's Apple ID and information related to that. So we're still working through all that and trying to figure out what comes next. And it's crazy that two plus years of this, and we're still in the thick of this fight. And who knows, hopefully by January 21st, we'll see some real substantive change, not only from a selfish perspective for myself and for Steve, but for this nation as a whole as it relates to the FBI.
No doubt. Well, I'm selfish for you guys, too. I want some freaking scalps. Let's hope we actually get those. Garrett, Steve, appreciate you both. It upsets me a great deal when warriors, whatever the stripe, get screwed by the people they fight for. It has always bothered me. When it happens to guys in the military, it bothers me. When it happens to hard chargers in the FBI like that, it gets to me. Ugh. Anyway, I hope they see justice one day. All right. We have to talk to Carol Roth about tariffs and the economy and all this BRICS stuff before we get to that. Steve Friend brought up an important point there, the low TGOP. The problem with people like Mike Rounds is not just that they're losers and probably compromised with some sort of blackmail material. The problem is their testosterone levels are so low. And I know this because virtually every man's is here in the country. We've lost 50% of our testosterone in 50 years because of all the estrogens in the waters and the plastic. We freaking shower in it now. We are just losing ourselves. So what do you do about it? You have to do something. You can't just let it go. It's not one of those things, we'll figure it out. No, you have to do something. Chalk is what you do. Handle it naturally. I take a male vitality stack from Chalk every day. Natural herbal supplements. I'm not jamming needles in my arm. Natural herbal supplements will get you exactly where you need to be. Go get a subscription, massive discounts on subscription at chalk.com/JesseTV. Take it for 90 days and tell me how great you feel. We'll be back. Okay, so let's have some economic talk. Some of it you may love, some of it you may hate, but we have to discuss things like trade, tariffs, things like that. Now, Donald Trump has been using tariffs, or I should say specifically the threat of tariffs, to get our neighbors to be more neighborly, if you will. We talked about this a bit last week. Canada, Mexico, Trump's telling them, hey, all those goods we buy from you, I'm going to start slapping a big fatty tax on those things if you don't stop the drugs and illegals from pouring into this country. Those freaking Canadians, we don't need any more of them here. That aside, it was a threat, right? It's not about the tariff. It was about the threat. Do better, comply. Well, Donald Trump's not done using this threat. He's now threatening the BRICS nations. You know, that alternate to the dollar, because the dollar is the world's reserve currency. Now Trump's out there saying, you better drop all this BRICS business or a tariff's coming your way, too. Let's talk to Carol Roth about that. Joining me now, Carol Roth, owner. Owner? I guess maybe she owns them. I should have said author, but we'll call her an owner. An owner of this wonderful book. I'm sure she bought it. You Will Own Nothing is the name of the book. She wrote it. She wrote a bunch of good books. Okay, Carol, I'm not a huge tariff guy. I generally think that that's kind of going after the symptom of a problem instead of the root. I, however, am very fine with the threat of tariffs on these scumbag countries. It works for me. What say you?
I think we're dealing with a little bit of art of the deal here, Jesse. This is Trump blustering and saying these are the things that we might do and you're going to want to come to the table. And what's great about Trump is that he's not your typical politician. So if you're trying to deal with him and you pull out the playbook that you're going to use on Joe Biden or whoever it is that's running the country now and has been for the last 4 years, that's not going to work. And even though you've seen Trump before, he just is sort of a wild card. So he could do something. He might not do it. You don't know, but you probably don't want to find out. And I think that's one thing that everybody likes, that sort of surprise element gives him a little bit more negotiating leverage. So I'm absolutely fine with him threatening all these kinds of things to get people to the negotiating table. It sounds like that has worked already, perhaps in Mexico. And probably, you know, given the fact that Justin Trudeau went down to Mar-a-Lago, probably worked there a little bit. So now he's going after the BRICS. The challenge with the BRICS and the currency there, and the BRICS is sort of a conglomeration of nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, Saudi Arabia, and they've added a few other folks in the last couple of years, is that, you know, they are sort of a different animal. And when you start saying, oh, you have to use the US dollar, you can't create their own currency, the reality is that they haven't been using their own currency. There was a lot of speculation about it. But what they've been doing is they've been trading more amongst each other in their own currencies, which is going to be very difficult for the US to say that you can't do that. And China, which is obviously the big dog over there, they have been offering credible settlement for
for any extra yuan that anybody has, and saying that we'll let you settle that in gold. And that's part of the reason why we've been seeing this price increase in gold. So when you think about the BRICS countries, in countries overall, they have been actually net sellers of treasuries over the last 10 years. So not to say that they never buy any, but on a net basis, they are selling more than they're taking in, because they just don't feel like that, you know, everything being priced in dollars is good for them, because when oil fluctuates wildly in dollars and food fluctuates wildly in dollars, it hurts them from a national security perspective and just an economic perspective. So they're looking to find a different way. And the reality is that train has already left the station. So, you know, President Trump can come out and say this, and, you know, the U.S. dollar has to be at the center of everything, but he's not going to be able to stop them from trading in their other currencies or in gold, which, by the way, has been what has been replaced by all the treasuries that have, you know, not been, or have been sold off. It's not that these countries are buying other currencies for their reserves. They're buying gold.
I'm glad you brought that up, Kuo, because that actually brings me perfectly, we didn't plan this ahead, I swear, everybody, that brings me perfectly to the $36 trillion in debt, the spending and printing insanity of this country. I'm fine with Donald Trump threatening these dirtball countries. I don't like them. I hope he goes all in. Sounds great to me. But the truth is, something like BRICS, whether it's gold, silver, BRICS, or whatever, is an inevitability if we don't get the dollar back where it needs to be. And we can't do that unless we do the one thing there seems to be no appetite whatsoever for in Washington, and that's stopping the spending, right?
Well, I think that that is what the Trump administration is trying to do. They brought on a whole slew of very interesting characters, everybody from the Treasury Secretary pick, and obviously these folks need to be confirmed in many cases, but Scott Bessent, who is the pick right now for Treasury Secretary, he has a very interesting plan that he's floating, which is relying on growth as well as cutting spending. And we've talked about this before. You have to have the choreography, because yes, we have seen a couple percentage points in growth in the GDP over the last few years, but that's been propped up by deficits that run about 7% of our GDP. So if we were just to slash that all of a sudden we would have a shrinkage, and I'm not talking a Seinfeld shrinkage, but a financial shrinkage in our GDP that would be really, really horrible for the economy. So it needs to be this clear choreography where you get the growth that, you know, lets the private sector grow more than the amount that you're cutting, so that you have on a net basis, you know, what looks like a stronger economy. And Scott Bessent has a 3-3-3 plan. Sounds a little familiar from the past, but it's a little bit different, where he's looking at trying to have 3% growth while cutting the deficit to GDP to 3%, which, again, given the fact that it's 7-ish, that's more than half. And that's like a 2028 goal, because he knows that this needs to happen. He also wants to increase oil production by an additional 3+ million barrels a day, again, to sort of spark the growth. But there needs to be this choreography between all these different efforts, because as much as you and I would just like to, you know, Javier Milei and go in there and slash everything, we cannot do things in the same way we did things in the 1980s. In the 1980s, debt to GDP was at 30%. Today, it's at 120%. We don't have the flexibility in order to do the things the same way. So this needs to be done very carefully. And I, for one, feel very relieved that we have some adults in the room here understanding this and saying, we know what needs to be done, but it needs to be done thoughtfully in order for it to be done the right way and not have adverse impact.
Where do they cut, Carol? I'm not a child. I understand that the holy grails of these big federal entitlement programs are not going to see a single penny cut. I get all that. No politician is going to touch that. So if we're not touching those pieces of the pie, what kind of the pie is leaving?
So I think it's obviously wasteful, non-discretionary spending that you're going to have cut. There are plenty of places that are wasteful, even in something like the Defense Department, and we want to have a strong Defense Department. We know all kinds of money goes missing all the time. So we need to be able to hone in on that. And we've got some really good names again in Elon Musk and Vivek that are going to be looking at this, trying to see where these areas of waste are. One thing that would be nice too is to have a better interest rate so we didn't have so much debt. That would be a good place where we could hopefully cut over time, but I'm not sure we're going to see that either, Jesse. But again, you know, this entitlement piece, which you and I both know needs to be touched eventually, that's not going to happen this round. I think that Scott Bessent has even said, you know, that's for the J.D. Vance 2028, run for the country. That's going to happen the next time around. We just need to start moving things away from this, you know, horrible place that we're at now. And hopefully over time, if we can cut out all of the wasteful spending and get the government back to, yes, we have these crazy entitlement programs, but you know, there's not all of this other insane spending, from shrimps walking on treadmills to, you know, waste in different departments. And frankly, there are entire departments that should just be cut in their entirety, that we can then start to have a serious conversation about what the next level is. This is not something that's going to be happening overnight, but what I'm looking for is that movement in the right direction. And I think that movement in the right direction will inspire confidence that we are on the track to get there and allow more flexibility, more optimism, more investment, more hiring, all those things, because we do need that growth piece in order for any of this to work.
Wow. Nice of them to drop that hot potato in J.D. Vance's lap. Okay, Carol, it is the Christmas season, or, you know, Hanukkah for you people, and you have a message about small businesses. So go ahead.
Yeah, us people, like the small business owners, it's Hanukkah for us. By the way, I celebrate Christmas too, Jesse, just so you know. My dad didn't want us to be left out, so we always hung our stockings for Santa. But because we were lived in an entirely Jewish neighborhood, we were the only people that Santa came for. And so people would say, why did Santa come to your house? And I'd be like, well, obviously he just likes us and he must not like you. So Santa and I go way back. We still hang our stocking for Santa. But at any rate.
Oh, okay.
We want to support the backbone of the economy. We want to do that all year round, and definitely this holiday season. This is the time of year for many small businesses, especially in your community, you know, those stores on Main Street, where this will make or break whether or not they're in the red or black this year. Also on our website, which I'm see that you're showing right now, we do have our own small business gift guide. So if you're not sure what small businesses to support, it's a great way to start. CarolRoth.com and click on community, and you can see we've got more than 60 small businesses that we feature. But you know, every dollar that you spend in your local community, I think it's more than 70 cents stays in that local community. So it's a really good way to show your support locally as well. And we have consumers who are still spending this holiday season. Black Friday, we saw, I think it was the early estimates, over 3% overall, much more tilted towards online than the stores. So, you know, people are shifting their behaviors, but they haven't run out of cash yet, Jesse. They may be, you know, buried in debts and dipping into their savings, but they're going to have a good Christmas, Hanukkah, or whatever holiday that they are celebrating this season.
I really want you to do that. I really want you to go to carolroth.com, click on community. This is something, obviously we joke, but we both really, really believe in this. Patronize your small businesses, these evil corporations. You leave them alone as much as possible. Keep your money in your community. Carol, thank you, ma'am. As always, I appreciate you. Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah. All right. Lighten the mood. Next. All right. Before we lighten the mood, let me go ahead and make life easier on yourself. Do you want access to videos, really cool ones like the one we're about to pick out? Congratulations, it's totally free. All you have to do is go subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/@JesseKellyDC. You want to see the longer version of this, the how-to video? That's exactly where you go. Pick up your phone, do a little scan thing, subscribe, it's free. All right, now, I'm a bit of a chef. And this is the shorter version of my latest cooking video.
First of all, everything when it comes to cooking involves high quality ingredients. So make sure you spend the money, get the best ground beef you can find, okay? First of all, burgers in there. Seasoning salt. I just use Lowry's or whatever I happen to have. You don't have to stress the general seasoning salt. Little garlic powder, again, just a little dusting of garlic powder. And then, of course, as I've said many times before, the star of the show, Chipotle Tabasco sauce. Not Tabasco sauce, which is gross, Chipotle Tabasco sauce. This is the star of the show. Now, be generous with it. Don't be whining about heat. Most of the heat cooks off. I do want to stress that it's most of the heat cooks off. If you're one of these sensitive people, gingers, Canadians, you can't handle any kind of a heat, then you might get a little extra spice. But for those of us normal people, you should have just the appropriate amount of spice. This is an American cheese endeavor. Let freedom ring, baby. Don't use your fancy cheeses. Good cheeseburgers need American cheese. Then, the buns. The buns are more than just a delivery vehicle for the burger and the cheese. They're a critical part of the burger. So don't walk up in the grocery store and just grab a pack of buns. You have to finger the buns to make sure the buns are appropriate. One, get the buns from the back of the shelf. Everyone knows they put the older ones at the front, so they want you to buy them. Two, take the time, finger the buns. Make sure you have good buns. A good burger is a flat burger. So you want to smash that thing down real good and flatten it out. Flip. Now the second you flip it, get that American cheese on there because American cheese must be melted. Burger cheese must be melted. I cannot believe these savages who serve their burgers with the cheese unmelted. Now right about now you're probably thinking, okay, you have your high-end plates, you have your fingered buns. Jesse, what about all the ketchup and mustard and mayo and lettuce and tomatoes? Remember, world-famous Jesse Kelly burgers are world-famous for a reason. They don't need anything. No condiments, no vegetables, no nothing. You don't need any of that. And look how fast that American cheese goes to work. Boom. Burger is done. Burger is scooped. Burger is bun. That is ready to enjoy. You're welcome.
Enjoy. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.